12, Hanold repeated his half-dome solo. This time, twice as fast, finishing the route in 1 hour, 22 minutes. 12. Flow to abundance. Stratos. The balloon was a marvel, ghostly silver, as thin as a dry cleaning bag. Partially inflated at the Roswell, New Mexico launch site, it looked not unlike an amoeba dressed in haute couture. In the lower atmosphere, at full height, it rose a majestic 55 stories. In the stratosphere, pancaked by pressure, it stretched wider than a football field. And the stratosphere was where skydiver Felix Baumgartner was heading. The date was October 14th, 2012. The plan was for Baumgartner to ride that balloon some 24 miles above the Earth, higher than anyone has ever ridden a balloon before. To make this possible, he wore a one-of-a-kind pressure suit designed to buffer temperatures as low as 70 degrees below zero and wind speeds of more than 700 miles per hour, and to facilitate his ultimate goal, space diving out of the balloon and falling back to Earth, and along the way become the first human being to bareback the sound barrier, exceeding Mach 1 without aid of an engine or protection from a craft. Initially conceived in 2005, the Red Bull Stratos Project, as this space dive was known, began as a joint venture between the energy drink company and Austrian skydiver and base jumper Baumgartner. The big idea was to transcend human limits, which have existed for 50 years, with those years being how long it's been since 1960, when Air Force pilot Joe Kittinger plunged 19 miles out of a balloon as a test procedure for extreme high-altitude bailouts. The big question mark, of course, was could an energy drink company and an action sports hero accomplish what a half-century of government-backed space programs could not? Stratos was no small challenge. The technological issues were myriad. The list of catastrophic unknowns, even longer. No one had any idea if the human body could go supersonic. Would the shock waves tear Baumgartner's body apart? Would the suit breach? Even bigger were the psychological hurdles. While an exceptionally talented skydiver, Baumgartner had zero experience with the do-as-you're-told rigors of a military-modeled space program. Felix is an action sports athlete, explains Red Bull director of high performance Dr. Andy Walsh, who oversaw the project. He's used to being able to control everything. He's not used to taking orders or trusting his life to a team of strangers. Worse was the extreme claustrophobia produced by the spacesuit. In the capsule, on the way up, Baumgartner would have to endure long hours inside a vacuum-sealed straitjacket. Stratos was Baumgartner's lifetime dream. Yet halfway through the testing phase, he freaked out, quit the project, and flew home to Austria, unable to shake the fear. Eventually, Dr. Mike Gervais was brought in to help. In a testament to both how good our sports psychology techniques have become and how high a level of mental fortitude our top athletes now possess, it took 3 days for Baumgartner to get his phobia under control. When Felix walked off the project, says Walsh, it was the darkest moment in his life. But a phobia, that's deeply rooted fear. To face that, to come back, to trust strangers with his life, to put himself back into position to do something no one else had ever conceived of? I've seen plenty of astounding feats of human performance, but emotionally, Felix's journey is the farthest I've ever seen an athlete come. And all this was before the actual jump took place. The jump presented an entirely different suite of problems. Normally, skydiving is sensation-rich, an exceptionally wide field of view, and a full complement of air friction. But Baumgartner's face mask narrowed vision to a slit. As compensation, his gloves contained unbreakable chrome plates that function as side-view mirrors. And the suit, even deflated, puts four layers of thick protection between skin and sky. Instead of reacting to the air itself, flying the suit required reacting to the reaction, like playing a video game with the delay built in. More alarming, in the non-existent atmosphere of the stratosphere, falling objects have a tendency to spin and keep spinning. If Baumgartner couldn't regain control, as he once told reporters, at a certain RPM, there's only one way for the blood to leave your body, and that's through your eyeballs. To help Baumgartner avoid having to think about such things, and because redundancy was security, when the balloon reached its top altitude, Mission Control ran through a 40-item checklist. Item 26, move seat to rear of capsule. Item 27, lift legs onto the door threshold. The whole process was designed to calm nerves with clear goals. Of course, 128,100 feet in the air calms a relative matter. When the list was complete, Baumgartner stood outside the capsule on a tiny exterior step, the earth, quite literally, at his feet. He took a moment to take in the view, then said a few words into his microphone. Sometimes you have to go up really high to understand how small you really are. Next, he saluted. Next, he leapt. It took him 30 seconds to reach 600 miles per hour, less than a minute to shatter 700. He had just become the first human being to go supersonic. This was also when he started spinning. The Earth, some 20 miles below, whirled like a top, and kept whirling. Think shaken baby syndrome at Mach 1. But somehow, talk about flow or die, Baumgartner got everything back under control. He pulled out of the spin and locked into delta position, feet down, head up, and heading home. In total, Baumgartner's free fall lasted 4 minutes 19 seconds. His complete airtime, approximately 10 minutes. His top speed, 833.9 miles per hour, Mach 1.24. Baumgartner also took over the records for the highest manned balloon flight and the highest altitude jump, and, with YouTube broadcasting a live feed of the event, the highest numbers of concurrent viewers at 8 million. Perhaps more interesting than these records is the deeper why. On the Stratus website, there's a short list of potential applications for the knowledge gained from Baumgartner's jump. Passenger/crew exit from space. Developing protocols for exposure to high altitude and high acceleration environments. Exploring the effects of supersonic acceleration and deceleration on the human body. And testing the latest innovations in parachute systems. To put this in plainer language, experts have said that if the passengers on the Space Shuttle Challenger had been equipped with Baumgartner's suit, they might have lived through their mid-air crack-up. And along just these lines, some 6 months after Baumgartner's jump, Virgin Galactic's Spaceship 2 powered up its engines for the first time. Spaceship 1, you might remember, was the craft that won the Ansari X Prize in 2004. This original X Prize was a demonstration project, both proof that a private company could produce an affordable, reusable spaceship, and the necessary first step in opening the space frontier. The idea behind Spaceship 2 is the next step, tourism, taking paying customers on suborbital cruises. And that goal is not far away. Spaceship 2's flight was a test burn, the first in a series that ends with actual space flights. Some 550 people have purchased $200,000 tickets. According to Virgin Galactic founder Richard Branson, if everything goes according to plan, the plan is to have paying customers going Rocket Man before 2015. This is why Baumgartner's jump is critical. We're going to space. That's what's next. Within a few years, human beings will be routinely visiting low Earth orbit. In fact, Bigelow Aerospace, another private space company, is now developing an inflatable space hotel that's scheduled for 2017 deployment. With these developments around the corner, having basic space evacuation procedures in place, including a supersonic-capable spacesuit, just seems to make sense. But if you want to really talk about the adjacent possible, the combination of Baumgartner's success and the birth of the space tourism industry means that space diving could be the next extreme sport frontier. It sounds silly, of course, but it wasn't too long ago that surfing a 100-foot wave or free soloing Half Dome was equally ludicrous. Plus, consider the space diving upside. Imagine having 25 miles of fall time to work with. Talk about possibilities for seeing lines. Talk about the potential for creative innovation. Baumgartner touched down in the desert. But sooner or later, isn't someone going to try to land on a ski slope? How long then until we turn the space dive into the first stage of a double ski base? How long until it gets stranger than that? Somewhere, Shane McConkie is smiling. Learning to learn faster. Albert Heim fell off a mountain in the Swiss Alps in the late 19th century. Felix Baumgartner fell out of the stratosphere in the early 21st century. And in between, an exceptional group of athletes and an extraordinary state of consciousness have teamed up to do the impossible, over and over again. It's been a real magical mystery tour. Danny Way jumped over the Great Wall of China on a shattered limb. Ian Walsh paddled into a wave the size of an apartment building. Dean Potter caught hold of a climbing rope while falling at terminal velocity into the cellar of swallows. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, Arthur C. Clarke famously told us. Hopefully, one thing is now clear. Flow is that advanced technology. It is also very disruptive technology, which is exactly what we need right now. In 2011, I co-wrote a book with XPRIZE founder and Singularity University co-founder Peter Diamandis called Abundance. In it, we explore how exponentially growing technology combined with three other emerging forces gives humanity the power to significantly raise global standards of living over the next 2 to 3 decades. This is not the place for too much detail, but the most important thing to know is that abundance is not guaranteed. The four forces we describe create a wave of possibility, the possibility of solving society's grand challenges and exceeding the basic needs of every man, woman, and child on the planet. Yet if we want to ride this wave, we face the same issue as all surfers. First, we have to paddle fast enough to catch it. Without question, paddling fast enough to catch a possibility wave like abundance means we'll need the most capable versions of ourselves doing the paddling. We'll need to be better, faster, stronger, smarter. We'll need intrinsic motivation and incredible cooperation. Our imaginations will have to be deeply engaged, our creative selves operating at their full Picasso. In other words, if we're interested in forging a future of abundance, then we're going to need flow. What's more, we know this strategy works. The athletes in this book already used flow to create an abundance of progression in the physical domain. By harnessing the state, the unlikeliest of suspects have turned themselves into Superman. In slightly more than 2 decades, action and adventure sports have ballooned from barely a blip on our collective radar to the most popular sports in the world save football, soccer, and auto racing. This means an entire generation has grown up watching their heroes break barrier after barrier. Millions more saw it done with Project Stratos. Our children are now inculcated in a culture where the act of using flow to do that which has never been done before is actually done all the time. If you were creating a training program for people interested in tackling grand global challenges, you could do a lot worse. If it seems too much of a stretch to connect individual athletes rewriting the rulebook on human potential to society as a whole, solving the world's biggest problems, then consider the research of Ari Derhus. In the early 1980s, Verhoes was the director of strategic planning for Royal Dutch Shell and deeply curious about corporate longevity. At the time, Shell was 73 years old, already an anomaly. The average corporate lifespan is 12 and a half years. The average multinational, roughly 40. Yet, like Shell, a tiny fraction of corporations have thrived for centuries. Why does this matter so much? Because, to thrive for centuries, these corporations have had to tackle wars, famines, plagues, droughts, floods, depressions, recessions, climate shifts, technological revolutions, political instability, and regime changes. Everything on this list is a variation of a woe the world now faces. These too are our grand challenges. So figuring out how these rare organizations succeeded in the past gives us a time-tested, battle-hardened strategy to do the same in the future. To divine this secret, Verhoes put 27 corporations larger and longer lived than Shell under the microscope. He found a number of factors contribute to longevity, but one stood out far above the rest. The ability to learn faster. That was it. The secret to centuries of thriving. In an environment of turbulent change, as Verhoes famously wrote, "The ability to learn faster than your competitors is the only sustainable competitive advantage." As we already know, flow is the secret to learning faster. A lot faster. Data gathered everywhere from brick-and-mortar schools to virtual learning environments show that the state significantly increases positive learning attitudes and positive learning outcomes. The U.S. military trained snipers in flow twice as fast as normal. McKinsey established that executives in flow are 5 times more effective than their steady-state peers. This is exactly what 150 years of flow research has revealed. This is what the recent revolution in action and adventure sports clearly demonstrates. Flow brings out the very best in us. And for certain, it's that very best we'll need to create a world of abundance. But these facts tell us something else, equally important. This audiobook has never really been about daredevil athletes doing impossible deeds. It's always been about us, all of us, doing impossible deeds. It is our future that is on the line. We can harness flow and ride the wave of possibility that is abundance, or we can get dashed upon the rocks of half-hearted half-measures. And like the trailblazers we met in this audiobook, for us too, it's flow or die. We are the ones, Pulitzer Prize-winning author Alice Walker reminds us, that we have been waiting for. Yet, if the waiting is over and the journey begun, remember that flow is strong medicine, and this path not one for the timid. Along the way, we would do well to remember the wisdom of our elders, the long lineage of academics and athletes and artists who have already broken this trail. Flow, they tell us, is the gateway to impossible. But this has never been take 2 pills and climb Everest in the morning. Committing to this path demands a radical restructuring of our days and our ways. It demands a considerable tolerance for risk and a considerable shift in culture. We must learn how to play with fire. We must learn to learn faster. We must learn to live thousands of lives in our lifetime. And not lives of quiet desperation, rather of raucous innovation. Though naked spread eagles are optional. But what those naked spread eagles represent? A relentless challenging of the status quo. An everlasting belief in our own possibility. A playful excellence in the face of mortal consequences. Well, as mentioned, there's something to be said for the wisdom of our elders. To put this in different terms, the most interesting thing about an acorn is that it contains a whole oak. But the most interesting thing about a human? Well, we're not exactly sure. We do not know the full measure of what we might contain. We cannot yet leap tall buildings in a single bound, but the boldest among us are already throwing backflips off of them. And when he was hurtling through the vacuum of space, Felix Baumgartner was flying faster than a speeding bullet. So, does catching the wave of abundance still sound impossible? Perhaps. But like all the athletes in this audiobook, perhaps impossible is just the kind of challenge we've been waiting for. What the world needs most is Superman. What the world needs most is us. Afterward. All revved up and nowhere to flow? Not at all. We've got you covered. If you're interested in figuring out your own flow profile so you can create more of it in your life, check out www.flowgenomeproject.co/flowprofile. Want to take a deeper dive and train your flow game, or bring the science of optimum performance into your company or organization? Check out Flow to Impact Innovation and Leadership Workshops and Keynotes, www.flowgenomeproject.co/flowtoimpact. If you're interested in continuing this discussion, learning more about harnessing flow to raise your game, interacting with the author and many of the thinkers in this audiobook, or even helping to drive citizen science flow research forward, join Flow Hacker Nation at www.flowgenomeproject.co. And stay in touch with our latest thinking, commentary, and events on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/flowgenome. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Rise of Superman, Decoding the Science of Ultimate Human Performance by Stephen Kotler. Copyright 2014 by Stephen Kotler. Performed by Jeff Cummings. Directed by Tom Parks. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number. 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.